I mean, usually when we look at modern celebrity romance, there's just this built-in expectation of absolute 24/7 visibility.
Yeah. Oh, entirely. It's practically a cultural requirement at this point.
Right. Like you've got the paparazzi shots leaving a restaurant, the perfectly curated Instagram hard launches.
And then the viral TikToks analyzing like every little body language micro expression.
Exactly. It feels almost binary today.
Yeah.
I mean, you are either entirely off the grid, living in a cabin somewhere, or you are living your relationship on a public stage for the whole world to consume.
Yeah. A front row seat is practically culturally expected. We've structured entire economies around the consumption of other people's personal milestones. It really blurs the line between a romantic partnership and, well, a reality television broadcast.
But then you step into the world of the ultra elite. Specifically, we're looking at the upcoming 2026 Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce wedding today. And that expectation of visibility is just completely shattered.
Completely. We are looking at a privacy landscape that is, frankly, unprecedented in its scale and severity.
Right. And to figure out how they're pulling this off, we've been digging through a really fascinating stack of sources for this deep dive. We've got legal reviews on extreme non-disclosure agreements, insights from luxury security firms like VIS Protection, and industry analysis on how high-end events are changing.
The contrast is really what makes this so compelling to look at. We are seeing a masterclass in narrative control. They're blending advanced legal theory with high-end security protocols and pop culture economics.
And the massive contradiction sitting at the center of all this is really our hook for today. I mean, think about it. The Swift-Kelce romance began on literally the most public stage imaginable.
Oh, yeah. Over 100 million people tuning in.
Right. We are talking Arrowhead Stadium, VIP suites, the friendship bracelets, cameras catching every touchdown kiss, everyone analyzing their interactions during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It was a globally broadcast courtship.
It really was.
Yet their upcoming wedding is locked down tighter than, like, a classified government intelligence briefing.
It is a jarring pivot, isn't it? I mean, you go from a relationship that fundamentally boosted NFL ratings and moved millions in merchandise to an event shrouded in absolute impenetrable secrecy.
I want you, the listener, to just imagine this for a second. Imagine opening your mail, excited to see a friend save the date.
Always a fun moment.
Right. But instead of a beautiful card with a location and a registry link, out falls this dense, multi-page legal contract.
Yeah, an ironclad legal document.
And you have to sign this thing before they will even tell you what city the wedding's taking place in.
Which is wild to even think about for a normal person.
It is. And then when you finally arrive, you are met at the door by ex-military security operatives who physically confiscate your phone.
No exceptions.
Zero exceptions. No bathroom selfies. No, just one story from my close friends. Your device is just gone.
See, applying those protocols to a normal life milestone sounds incredibly dystopian.
Very much so.
Yeah. But for individuals operating at this specific tier of fame and wealth, well, a wedding ceases to be just a personal milestone. It actually transforms into a highly vulnerable corporate asset.
Let's unpack the fortress they are building to protect that asset. Because the operational details leaking out, ironically leaking out, are staggering.
Staggering is the right word.
We are hearing rumors of a massive multi-million dollar budget, elaborate fairy tale themed decor, and security that one outlet literally compared to a presidential level operation.
Which, given the logistics, isn't much of an exaggeration.
There is chatter about fake out venues being fully staffed just to throw off paparazzi, secret tunnel networks, and even the possibility of historic Madison Square Garden being utilized.
Setting up a fake venue is a perfect example of the logistics involved here. I mean, think about the cost. You aren't just paying for the wedding you are having. You are fully funding a decoy wedding.
Wait, really? A fully functioning decoy?
Exactly. You have to hire caterers, floral designers, lighting crews for a location that will never see a single guest. Simply to act as a magnet for drones and tabloids. And that blanket no phone rule is really the cornerstone of this entire operation. It is a strict, physically enforced protocol.
When I read through these operational details in the sources, you know, need to know access, the device confiscation, the ironclad legal threats, my mind immediately went to Silicon Valley.
How so?
Well, it sounds exactly like Apple's playbook for an unreleased iPhone reveal. It doesn't sound like two people getting married. It sounds like a corporate product launch.
That is actually a really apt comparison.
I just find myself wondering, wouldn't hiring a few extra bouncers and renting a private island just be easier? Why engineer this massive, stressful lockdown?
Because an uncontrolled leak represents a massive commercial risk. You have to remember, both Switched and Kelchi are billion-dollar entities. Your Apple product launch analogy is the perfect framework to view this through.
Right, because of the sheer scale of their brands.
Exactly. I mean, Taylor Swift's Eras Tour generated over $2 billion in revenue. She is arguably the most commercially potent solo entertainer alive.
She is her own economy.
She really is. And Travis Kelce has leveraged his on-field success into one of the NFL's most lucrative personal brands.
The staggering combined commercial footprint is just hard to wrap your head around. They're essentially a multinational conglomerate tying the knot.
A single leaked wedding photograph, taken from a bad angle on a guest's iPhone, could easily command 6 or 7 figures on the open media market.
7 figures for a blurry photo. That is insane.
It is. But the financial hit of that one photo isn't even the primary concern. An uncontrolled leak spins narratives that her internal team hasn't sanctioned. Industry insiders note that this relationship has transitioned from what they call the acquisition phase to the protection phase.
Okay, wait. Meaning the acquisition phase was when they were dating publicly and absorbing all that cultural capital.
Precisely. During the dating phase, public visibility was the asset itself. It generated daily headlines, it brought an entirely new demographic of young women to NFL broadcasts, and it sold incredible amounts of merchandise.
Yeah, I remember seeing his jersey sales completely skyrocket.
Yeah, right. The visibility was mutually beneficial to both of their brands. But now that the relationship has reached the permanence of marriage, the calculus completely inverts.
Because they already have the attention.
Exactly. The asset is no longer the romance itself. The asset is the exclusive right to narrate it.
The exclusive right to narrate. I love that phrasing because it really highlights the control aspect. But let me push back on the corporate angle for just a moment here.
Oh, go ahead.
If you dive into the fan communities, like the Swifties, they see this lockdown through a completely different lens. To them, this isn't some cold corporate prudence or calculated brand strategy.
No, they view it much more personally.
Right. They see this as a necessary act of emotional self-defense. They see a woman reclaiming control of her life after, you know, 15 years of having her relationships publicly dissected, critiqued, and weaponized by tabloids.
And that emotional perspective is incredibly valid. It points to a really fascinating duality in modern celebrity.
How do you mean?
Well, the reality of operating at that stratospheric level of fame is that emotional self-defense and corporate strategy are functionally indistinguishable.
Wait, so you are saying her emotional boundaries are quite literally priced into her net worth? Like, protecting her peace of mind is indistinguishable from protecting the brand's stock price.
That is exactly what I'm saying. Personal privacy for a megastar is intrinsically linked to brand value. Protecting her emotional well-being by keeping the paparazzi out prevents burnout and preserves the pristine nature of her image.
Oh, wow. I never really thought about it blending together like that.
The goal in both the emotional and corporate column is information compartmentalization. The friendship bracelet got you into the stadium, which fed the narrative and grew the brand.
Right.
But the NDA keeps the stadium out of the chapel, which preserves the sanity of the individual behind the brand. Any official content we eventually see from this wedding will likely be professionally shot, perfectly curated, and commercially timed.
Probably integrated into a future documentary or a new album rollout, knowing how her team operates.
Exactly. She is turning a deeply personal milestone into owned intellectual property.
But you can't just politely ask 500 people not to tweet about the biggest pop culture event of the decade, though. I mean, human nature is going to win out.
No, polite requests don't work at this level. You need serious legal teeth to enforce that.
And that brings us to the mechanics of how they actually achieve this silence. The Marquette Law Review article in our research stack details the fascinating and somewhat terrifying world of reputational NDAs. Or RNDAs.
The RNDA is really the invisible legal engine making this entire fortress possible.
Let's break that down, because I think most of us are familiar with standard NDAs in a business context. Like, you get hired by a tech startup, and you sign an agreement stating you won't steal their proprietary code or client list.
Right, standard intellectual property protection. You can't walk out the door with the Coca-Cola recipe.
Exactly. But an RNDA operates in a completely different sphere, right? Yeah.
It does. Its primary purpose is not to protect a concrete trade secret. It is specifically drafted to protect a reputation. And because reputation is such a nebulous, ethereal concept, these contracts define confidential information in overwhelmingly broad terms.
Broadly feels like an understatement when you look at some of the clauses mentioned in the sources. I mean, they mentioned these contracts covering personal activities, physical health, and even your philosophical views.
It covers almost every interaction.
You literally can't legally discuss what the person thinks about a random topic over dinner. And then there's this concept called a meta-confidentiality clause.
The meta-confidentiality clause is truly a hallmark of elite secrecy. It dictates that you are legally prohibited from even acknowledging the existence of the NDA itself.
So you can't even tell your coworkers, hey, I can't talk about the wedding I went to this weekend because I signed an NDA.
No. Uttering that sentence is, in itself, a material breach of the contract.
It's like Fight Club rules for contract law. The first rule of the NDA is you do not talk about the NDA.
That's a great way to put it. And to make people actually abide by these terms, they attach massive financial threats.
Oh, yeah. The sources point to some crazy examples.
Yeah.
They mentioned Justin Bieber reportedly utilizing these, they called them Cupid contracts, for romantic partners and party guests.
Which is quite the name for a legal document.
Right. And those reportedly imposed a $3 million penalty for a single breach. And Donald Trump, when he entered the White House, reportedly had a draft NDA for his staff featuring a $10 million per breach liquidated damages clause.
The financial threats have to be astronomical to outcase the tabloid incentive. If a magazine is offering a guest $500,000 for a cell phone video of the first dance, a standard $50,000 penalty in the NDA just won't act as a deterrent.
It has to hurt more than the payout helps.
Exactly. However, it's important to note that the legal landscape surrounding these agreements is actively shifting right now.
Because of the potential for abuse.
Yes. In New York, for instance, recent legal reforms like Senate Bill 4516, alongside the Federal Speak Out Act, have placed strict limits on how NDAs can be used.
Those reforms ensure you can't use an NDA to cover up illegal conduct or silence whistleblowers who are reporting sexual harassment or workplace discrimination, right?
Yes, which is a massive and necessary step forward for workers' rights. The hashtag MeToo movement significantly changed how the judicial system views NDAs used to suppress claims of abuse.
But there's a distinction for private events, isn't there?
A very crucial distinction. While they are heavily restricted in cases of harassment or illegal activity, RNDAs remain perfectly legal and highly enforceable when used to protect sensitive intellectual property, personal privacy, and confidential events.
So a luxury wedding falls squarely into that legally protected category.
Squarely. It is entirely legal to enforce silence on a private party.
I see a glaring flaw in this legal armor, though. I mean, an NDA is ultimately just a piece of paper. Can a contract actually override basic human nature?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because information naturally wants to be free. People love to gossip, especially about unprecedented events. I have to imagine these legal threats sometimes backfire spectacularly.
That vulnerability is exactly what the Marquette Law Review piece spends a significant amount of time analyzing. Because when an RNDA fails, the fallout is exponentially worse than if the contract had never existed at all.
It triggers that phenomenon known as the Streisand effect, right?
Exactly.
Named after Barbara Streisand suing to have photos of her Malibu home removed from a public database, which inadvertently drew, like, millions of people to look at the photos who otherwise never would have even cared.
The mechanism of failure here is what's so fascinating. The act of trying to enforce the secret draws far more public attention than the secret itself.
Can you give an example of that in the NDA context?
The article highlights the highly publicized situation involving Michael Cohen attempting to enforce an arbitration restraining order against Stormy Daniels regarding an NDA.
Okay, break down the mechanics of why that backfired so badly. How does the legal enforcement itself become the actual problem?
Because to enforce a contract, you usually have to interact with the court system. Filing motions for restraining orders or suing for breach of contract inherently creates a public record of the dispute.
Oh, so you're making it public just by trying to keep it private.
Precisely. You are dragging the suppressed information out into the open to prove it was suppressed. Information is intangible. Once a rumor or a photo is out, suing your wedding guest for leaking it might generate months of negative, highly visible press.
Whereas the leaked photo itself probably would have faded from the news cycle in 48 hours.
Exactly. The lawsuit becomes a bigger story than the leak.
So a piece of paper clearly isn't enough on its own. If a guest decides the million-dollar tabloid payout is worth the risk of a lawsuit, you need a way to physically stop them from capturing the information in the first place.
Which is where the tactical execution comes in.
Right. This transition from legal strategy to physical muscle brings us to the booming wedding security industrial complex.
The elite are no longer just hiring event security or standard bodyguards. They are funding advanced military-style operations. The insights from VIS Protection in our research stack really highlight how specialized this has become.
I mean, we aren't talking about guys in tight black t-shirts with earpieces checking names on a clipboard outside a ballroom anymore.
Not even close. These firms hire exclusively ex-military or ex-police operatives. In the UK, they are required to carry SIA licenses, Security Industry Authority licenses.
It sounds super rigorous.
It is a highly regulated field requiring extensive background checks and tactical training.
What stands out to me in the source is how these firms define a successful operative. It isn't about physical intimidation or being the largest person in the room. They explicitly screen for what they call an NDA-first mindset.
That mindset is crucial.
They actually list red flags for bad security personnel. Like, if an operative boasts about their tactical work on social media, or if they name-drop past celebrity clients to boost their own profile, they're out.
If they demonstrate an ego over service mentality, they are immediately disqualified.
A genuine professional in this space just blends in completely. They don't chase the cameras. They spend their time preventing what the cameras never even see.
Consider the logistical nightmare of securing a high-profile wedding. You have VIP travel routes, paparazzi actively attempting counter-surveillance with long lenses and drones.
Drones are a huge issue now.
Massive. Plus, you have local vendors, catering teams, floral designers, venue staff. Every single individual in that supply chain is a potential breach point.
It literally operates just like a classified military deployment. The caterers and the florists are treated like vetted intelligence assets.
They likely have their phones confiscated and their backgrounds checked just to bring the appetizers into the building.
That is wild. And this intense focus on operational security ties into a massive cultural shift highlighted by the UAD in our sources. The fundamental definition of luxury in the event space has completely flipped.
It really has. Historically, luxury was synonymous with visual extravagance.
Right, showing off.
Exactly. It meant sweeping venues, abundant and rare florals, and highly publicized lists of notable guests. The entire purpose of the event was to showcase your wealth and status to the outside world.
But now, privacy is the ultimate status symbol. The WD article states it perfectly. What you don't share has become the ultimate signifier of taste.
Because true privacy is now incredibly difficult to achieve. It is no longer a passive state of simply being left alone.
What do you mean by that?
In today's hyper-connected digital age, privacy is an active, expensive, and legally enforced commodity, and only the ultra-wealthy possess the resources to truly buy it.
I think the most surprising takeaway from our research, honestly, is that this isn't just staying with billionaires and A-list celebrities like Taylor Swift anymore.
No, it's trickling down.
This intense desire for narrative control is reaching other levels. Even for high net worth individuals who aren't famous at all, these things called adjusted model releases are becoming a standard part of vendor contracts.
Yeah, an adjusted model release is essentially a customized legal rider.
How does it work for a normal rich person?
Well, couples dictate exactly which images their vendors, the photographer, the planner, the florist are legally allowed to share publicly on their business portfolios.
So the florist can't just snap a picture of your beautiful table centerpiece and post it to their Instagram to promote their floral business.
Not unless you, the client, explicitly approve that specific photo first. The client retains total, absolute authorship over how the event is perceived by the public.
It represents a really fascinating sociological shift, I think. It is a total rejection of the modern default expectation that every single life event must be instantly shared and consumed as digital content.
It is the client drawing a hard boundary and saying, I own this experience and I will strictly control how, when, and if it is distributed.
Let's bring all these threads together here. We started by looking at the incredible contradiction of the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce romance. I mean, a relationship born in the bright lights of NFL stadiums and Super Bowl broadcasts, but culminating in this lockdown, no phone, NDA-enforced fortress wedding.
And we've traced the architecture of that fortress today. We looked at the staggering financial logic of treating a high-profile romance as a vulnerable corporate asset.
Moving from the acquisition of cultural capital to the strict protection of it.
Exactly. We explored the ironclad legal mechanics of reputational NDAs and those meta confidentiality clauses that enforce the silence.
Right, the Fight Club rules. And we've seen how this demand for absolute secrecy has fueled the rise of a highly specialized wedding security industrial complex, redefining modern luxury away from flashy public displays of wealth and toward the ultimate modern flex, total legally enforced invisibility.
It serves as a true masterclass in modern narrative control. It demonstrates just how much effort and money goes into ensuring a private moment actually stays private today.
Before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to turn this concept back to you, the listener. We've spent this time exploring how billionaires and pop stars weaponize contracts, hire ex-military guards, and spend millions of dollars to buy back their privacy and tightly control their personal narratives.
Which raises a vital question about our own behavior, really.
Yeah.
In an era where everyone is constantly broadcasting their lives, their locations, their relationships, and their milestones on social media, well, are we freely giving away our own exclusive right to narrate for the price of a few likes?
It really makes you wonder who is actually benefiting when we turn our own personal milestones into public content. Are we the ones in control of our story, or are we just feeding the digital machine? It's definitely something to mull over the next time you reflexively reach for your phone to document a moment at a friend's wedding. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you. Keep looking beneath the surface, and we will catch you next time.